Welcome back to Yang Daily. I'll be your host, Alex Cheney, bringing you all the Yang news you need to live your life right. Nothing huge today, but we do have some pretty heavy sentiment polls on America that are revealing the state of the nation. We're in historic times. Let's get to it. Humanity Forward continues its clearance sale on endorsements, now adding Grace Meng, a DNC vice chair for Congress. Yang shouted out her support for emergency cash relief, which is good, but this endorsement strikes me and many others as questionable. Her opponent, Mel Gagarin, supports UBI, and she does not. Granted, Mel is opposed to a VAT, and certainly advocating for a UBI poorly can do more harm than not advocating for it at all, but Grace's economic section boils down to public funding for technology, science, and education programs, and that's it. Like, okay, cool, but where's the rest of it? That doesn't even begin to cover an economic platform. She's also made unequivocal remarks of unconditional support for police in the past. I just don't know about this one personally, but you can look into her yourself and see what you think. Reminder that New York votes in 2 days. Make sure you know who you're voting for by visiting Humanity Forward or Income Movement websites to read up on their endorsements and make sure you vote. There's only one way out of this mess, and that's it. A poll of Canadians for a UBI anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 annually finds that 59% support the concept of UBI, which means that we're actually ahead of Canada in something to do with social progress for once. Yay! The poll also found Canadians were split evenly on how it would affect work ethic and whether it was affordable, showing that ignorance on the topic is still strong. Canadians mostly said they would only support it if the rich paid for it. If you missed the Poor People's Virtual March, you can catch their recording at the link below. It was quite the introduction with dozens of speakers and events regarding issues impacting the poor. You'll learn a lot and come out armed with facts and a plan. It also has a sign language interpreter. So I guess we have to mention Trump's rally in Tulsa, as he's connected it with protests and racism and the pandemic, the economy, everything. Reports from the Trump campaign leading up to the rally were claiming nearly a million tickets requested for the biggest rally in history by a factor of 10. Trump himself said there wouldn't be an empty seat. Well, it turns out that less than 10,000 showed up to a stadium that holds 19,000. There were, in fact, a lot of empty seats. The overflow events were quickly and quietly dismantled, but it didn't stop Trump from putting on a show. Watching it makes me ill, but I did it for you. Here's just a few choice highlights. Trump started off by claiming, quote, "incredible success in rebuilding America," end quote. It's hard to imagine what he could possibly be referring to here. The nearly 50 million unemployed? The 30% who can't make rent? The highest number of COVID cases in the world stemming from possibly the worst handling of the pandemic in the industrialized world? That's coming from the World Health Organization, mind you. The massive jump in wealth inequality and hollowing out of the middle class, perhaps? I honestly don't know, but I do know that having the president pretend that things are great when they're actually terrible does not give me confidence that he's going to do anything about it. He went on to call protesters thugs, not the rioters, mind you, the protesters outside the rally. He also referenced their, quote, "extremism, destruction, and violence," end quote, and called them the radical left. No mention of any violence or destruction from police, strangely enough. He then went into a skit on different names for COVID, introducing his new favorite, Kung Flu, and hitting up the old favorite, China Virus, despite knowing that that name emboldens racists. And he made a bizarre complaint about it having so many different names, ignoring the fact that he propagated most of them. He also made a jab at protesters not being concerned about mask wearing, but from what I've seen, almost all of the protesters do wear masks. Trump's indoor rally, by contrast, had nary a mask to be seen, when it's been estimated that the virus spreads about 14 times more easily indoors than out. Trump said the protesters want to, quote, "demolish our heritage so they can impose a new oppressive regime in its place," end quote. Again, what heritage exactly is Trump referring to? The only heritage I see getting attacked is a heritage of racism and police brutality, which they're attacking because it is oppressive. Is that the heritage that Trump and his people are trying to defend? Am I missing something here? He then, of course, completely misrepresented the defund police movement as wanting to get rid of all cops and have no emergency response for violent situations. He literally said that all of the protesters vandalizing statues are Democrats, despite having absolutely no way of knowing that, unless he himself is saying that Republicans can't possibly rail against racism. I should mention that when I say literally, I mean that in the classical sense, where it actually had a meaning and a reason to exist as a word. Trump went on to again promoted a year of prison for burning an American flag because apparently protecting inanimate objects is the pressing reform the justice system needs in his mind. Oh, and he also literally said that he told his people to slow down COVID testing because it was making the number of cases look bad. Wow. So there's one more unthinkable crime he just admitted to on national TV. Trump also had the gall to tweet recently that our testing response has been excellent despite it objectively being among the worst in the world. Anyway, you get the picture, and I want his thoughts out of my head, so let's change the subject. As COVID heats up again in Florida, we got news today that they have broken their record for highest case count in 15 of the last 16 days. The World Health Organization reports that it's also accelerating around the globe, hitting the highest number of daily cases yet, with half of those in the Americas. Not looking good. A Barron's article highlights that the American middle class is shrinking and approaching the unenviable company of Russia and Turkey in proportion of population, falling far behind countries like Japan, Germany, and France. They also note that economic history clearly shows the strongest, most durable periods of economic expansion in most countries occur when the middle class expands. It certainly was the case for the U.S. in the 20th century as well as in the expansionary periods, when the rich were taxed at much higher rates, narrowing the income gap while real wages grew. Ah, the days before trickle-down economics took hold. Good times. Meanwhile, a poll of the outlook of Americans finds that more than 72% of Americans consider the present time to be the lowest point in their lifetime for America. 83% said that the future of the nation is a significant source of stress to them. 71% said that police brutality against Black Americans and minorities was also a source of stress. 78% said the pandemic is a significant source of stress. 66% blame their feelings on the government's handling of the pandemic. In a Gallup poll released earlier this week, only 42% of U.S. adults said that they are extremely proud to be an American, the lowest on record since the survey started in 2001. More of the Making America Great that Trump was bragging about, I suppose. The North Face released a statement that they will be withdrawing all ads from Facebook and its subsidiary, Instagram, in response to their failure to regulate hate speech on their platforms. And finally, Be a King tweeted out a clip of MLK speaking on the way that white people were given land grants by the government during expansion into the Western United States while denying the same privilege to Black Americans. I want to highlight this because it's something that relates to both racism and UBI, and something I've had to explain to people online when they try to tell me that America wasn't built on handouts. Because the fact is, it actually was built on handouts of land, which was the sensible thing for the government to give people at the time to invest in them so that they could benefit the Commonwealth. But it was not given to all people, which is a major source of the racism in economics today. Those lands appreciated in value, growing wealth through generations, but only for white families. Just as investing in people built America, it is still a good idea to invest in our people today, but with money instead of land, and to everyone instead of some of us. As R.C. Bregman discussed on Yang Speaks recently, a species that does not cooperate, that does not work together to advance itself, would not be anywhere near where we are now. We got here by working together, by propping each other up, by sharing in progress. The recent concept of rugged individualism honestly goes against everything that has advanced our species thus far. When the people prosper, the country prospers. And as Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. America has never been perfect, but what makes our country great is an ongoing march toward perfection. UBI is both economic and racial justice, and it's the next step in that long march. And that'll do it for today's Yang Daily. Check out Grace Ming and the Poor People's March. Send those sentiment polls to your congresspeople to help them decide on stimulus. Help advocate for clear, fundamental policy goals for the protests. If you're going out to protest, wear protection, especially on your eyes, head, and throat. If you get arrested while protesting, remember not to say anything without a lawyer. Whatever you choose to do, be wise, be safe, and act with measured purpose toward real solutions. And don't forget to Yang Daily.